Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. Here's where we talk with people helping struggling teens and young adults. All the interviews in this series can be found at my website, strugglingteens.com. Today is September the 15th, and we're going to talk about addiction and denial. That's the name of the topic. My guest is Carl Olding. Well, good afternoon. Good evening, actually, Carl. Good to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me, Lon.
Well, Carl is the founder of Elk Mountain Academy in North Idaho, and he founded it in 1994, and he works with kids and young adults with behavioral problems, largely recovery and substance abuse, but they get a lot of other types of things, too. Now, the title of the book, he's also an author, title of the book is Addiction and Denial. And so, tell me a little bit about how you came about the book, and what do you hope the readers will get out of it?
Well, let me tell you a little bit how it came about. What happened is, about 10 years ago, I was on the phone with the parents. We would have been around for about 15 years by that point, and I was going over the basic stuff about how important it is for parents to be on the same page as far as consequences go, and as far as coming together with a plan when there's a problem at home. A lot of my guys have had trouble in school. A lot of them have been arrested for possession of marijuana, drunk driving, those kinds of things. And oftentimes, the parent that's the tough one against the parent that's not, and to try and manipulate their way in and like that. And so I was just going over how important it is to keep your word. And if your kid is grounded, that means he's grounded. And that does, you know, he doesn't get away from not being grounded by complaining, whining, moaning, or threatening, or whatever. And so it occurred to me how many hundreds of times over the years I'd had that kind of conversation. I thought, I'm going to put this in writing and see what happens.
So basically, you're talking on that point, you're talking about consistency. It's very important to say what you mean, and mean what you say, and follow through. Otherwise, the kid wins.
Correct. And if dad is too hard, for example, and mom is way too soft, the kids know that, and they'll exasperate that. Mm-hmm. They'll build it up, and they'll make it work for them. And then once they do that, then they know that they can win, and then it's going to happen again and again and again.
And the parents don't know what hit them.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And using typically gets worse.
Oh, yeah. It gets worse, and other things happen, and the parents lose control on that. What do you mean in the title by denial? What's the denial that you're talking about?
Well, for example, a lot of my parents say, I don't want my kid being labeled an addict or an alcoholic. He is 15 years old, and it's not that bad. And I always assure them, I don't give a diagnosis to any kid of alcoholism or addiction. What I want them to do is take a look at their relationship with alcohol and drugs and see what makes sense to them. I said, if I could talk you into it today, it wouldn't be very good, because someone could talk you out of it tomorrow. And so a lot of times, though, the kids are very comfortable with being alcoholic or addict. They go to AA meetings, they go to NA meetings, they hear about it, they see their behavior in space. They might not have done it as long as the people in the meetings, but they get it. And what's amazing to me is sometimes still the parents will be like, well, you know, I'm sure it wasn't that bad. Or, you know, and a lot of times, of course, the parents only know the tip of the iceberg, too. They know their kid's been in trouble, but they have no idea exactly the extent of the drug use or how much money they've stolen or like that.
You know, I have a rule of thumb on that, because it's very, very accurate in my experience. What I'd tell parents was that, well, you consider what you know about your kid, multiply by 10, and that's probably what's really going on. And I found that true
right.
with my kids, and they were pretty much normal kids, and all the clients. It was true in my childhood. I was in my 30s before I told the parents some of the things I'd done.
Right, right. And the parents, it's the kids he's hanging out with, you know. And, of course, there's a reason why the kid has picked those people to hang out with. And, and of course, their son's friends, parents are saying the same thing. You know, he hangs out with these rotten kids. That's what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. You know, the way you're talking, I was thinking of another subtitle for your book, maybe A Touch of Reality. This is what's really going on.
Right, right. Lon, I have a great example of this. I called it I gave her the Co-Alcoholic of the Decade Award. About a year ago, I was talking to a mother online, on the phone, about her situation with her son. And her son had started drinking and smoking pot when he was 14. And by the time he was 16, he was at a friend's house, had overdosed on heroin. The kids didn't want to get in trouble with the law, so they drug him outside to the sidewalk, put him on the sidewalk, went back in the house and called 911 and said, "Hey, this guy was walking by. We think he was on drugs, and he passed out, and he's laying in the sidewalk." Medics come. They hit him with the pads, and they get when they first get there, he's got no heartbeat, no pulse. They hit him with the pads. The third time they hit him with the pad, they got a slight murmur of a heartbeat, and the kid made it. And so I mentioned to mom. I said, "Well, at least you don't have to play that game that a lot of parents play." And she goes, "Well, what game would that be?" I said, "You don't have to wonder if your kid's got a drug problem or not." She says, "Well, I'm not sure he's got a drug problem." Now here's a kid that was literally dead on the street, laying there without a pulse, and she's not sure he's got a problem. You know, it's truly the best example of that I can think of.
Oh yeah, wow. But yeah, denial is a wonderful thing. It's a very imaginative and creative.
Well, in a lot of my parents too, my mom, it was kind of a different kind of denial. She was from Germany, and she had lived through the war and the Hitler thing and all that, and she would say, "You know, I can't understand why you would do this. I just don't get it. I don't get why you would drink till you fall over." I said, "Mom, I don't understand why you would have one and quit. We're never going to understand each other around booze and dope." Because what my mom thought was, it was impossible for me to have this problem when I had enough food, when there were no bombs going off around our house, mm-hmm. where we had cars that ran, where we went on decent vacations, where both had two loving parents that both had jobs. And my mom thought for sure there was some kind of reflection on them that I had this problem. So that's a different kind of denial.
Yeah, and I think that's a big one, reflection on them, because so much of our society, if a kid has a problem, the parents are blamed automatically. It's almost a shunning sometimes.
Right.
Okay, so addiction to denial, and you used it for a while. You wrote it, and you used it because you'd been telling these same stories. And how did it come about that it got published?
I always tease and say, you know what, I give these out. We have workshops every 3 months for our parents of our students. And I said, you know, some people are published by Simon & Schuster. I'm published by Staples, and it cost the school about $3.50 every time I gave my book away. And a parent of a former student happened to attend one of our workshops and said that she would pay to edit it and have it professionally published. And that's how it got on to, that's how it got online and on Amazon and like that, was because of her help. And she also bought the first 100 copies for the workshop for me to give them out too. So that's how it came about. It was really a gift for us.
Well, fantastic. Well, what I can understand, because as you had explained to me earlier, you would had told the same stories and the same examples and made the same points time and time and time again. So he wrote it all down. So maybe he could shortcut a little bit of that. But say a stranger buys one of your books on Amazon.com. What would you hope they would get from it, and what conclusions might they come to? What's sort of the, in back of your mind, what's the point? What do you hope will happen when a total stranger reads the book?
If a total stranger was to read the book, my hope would be, if they have this problem in their house, it's really not a matter of good, bad, right, wrong. It's a matter of sickness or health, mental health. And mm-hmm. most of the guys I work with, the vast, vast majority of the guys I work with, I'm talking about 95% plus, you take the booze and the dope away, and they're good kids. They're capable of getting good grades. They're capable of having good phone calls. They're capable of making good decisions. They're capable of taking care of a pet. They're capable of being around situations where drug and alcohol are present and not use again. So it's not a death sentence. We have so many parents that are pretty convinced that no matter what happens, this is hopeless because their kids got into it so deeply, so young.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a recovery place, and I was 19 when I recovered, and I'll just let them know, it's like, it is possible. Yeah, it's tough, and I have to tell you, we've lost former students. I've had 11 of my former students not make it. The oldest was 25, and the youngest was 19. And I gave it my best shot with all those kids, and the parents paid the money for Wilderness, and they paid the money for Elk Mountain or other treatments or hospitals or whatever, and they ended up having the nightmare anyway. It can happen. But it's also true that there's a lot of recoveries, and there are people that never drink or use again. It's not like relapse is part of recovery. It's not always part of recovery. It's never been part of my recovery. And a lot of the people I know that have been sober 30 years or longer got sober as teenagers. And that's the thing I'd really hope they get, is A, that it's not anything bad or wrong, and B, that they can recover. Once the kid gets a sense of what's really going on and what's available, and they have some fun sober, they start to experience life without alcohol and drugs, a lot start to see that, hey, I was barking up the wrong tree. And our longest-term kid has been clean and sober 22 years. You know, it is doable, and that's the message I'd like to get, is that you can recover from the thing, and not everybody that has is going to die from it or end up in prison. That's true for some, but it's certainly not true for all.
You know, the hope is the main thing here, and I found in my experience when I was admissions director at a therapeutic boarding school and in talking to parents as an educational consultant, I spend a lot of time, yes, there is hope. Don't give up, and you're doing the best you can. You're not a bad parent. That type of reassurance that they're good parents, if something's not going right, and the hope. That's one of the main things I've had to do, and it sounds like that's a main thing that you've had to do working the program.
Yeah, correct. There is hope, and there's lots of good stuff that can come out of this, too. That's the other thing in my book, I think, addresses, is that you can take this thing that a lot of people consider bad and negative, and it can become a hugely positive thing. I watch it all the time when senior students work with newer students, and they share their extreme strength and hope, and try and build them up, and invite them to go to more meetings than they have to go to, and be willing to listen to their stories and share experiences that are in common. They realize that part of this gift, it comes from giving it away, and that is really powerful to watch as well.
You know, now you've talked the term, and your orientation has been substance abuse, addiction, but it sounds like you also get some other kids. There's a lot of other addictions, or at least has the same pattern as addictions that you have to work with, too. What are some of the ones that you've seen in your school?
Well, you know, the big one is the Internet. We've got guys that game all night long or get involved in pornography, and view it over and over and over, and it gets very expensive, and they're stealing money from their parents, they're stealing the credit card, we recently had a kid where he literally got kicked out of school because he had missed so much, and it wasn't even porn for him, it was internet gaming. He was playing these games all night long and literally not getting up for school, and the parents finally took the computer and locked it in the bedroom, and the kid broke the door down to get the computer back, and he ended up at our school, and we were having a group, and the kids that were drug addicts or alcoholics or had problems with drugs and alcohol were calling him on it, saying, hey, what are you even here for? You know, and I brought up that if you look at his behavior, it's very, very similar. What difference does it make if you're stealing money for pot or you're stealing money so you can get the extra game pieces or the extra games that you need to get online? And if you're not making it in school, you're not making it in school. If you're not showing up for whatever reason, the school doesn't know why you're not showing up. They just know you're not showing up and you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they quickly got the notion that the kid's in the same boat. He just took a different route.
All right. Well, we've about ran out of our time, but I'd like to give you a little bit of time to talk about what Elk Mountain Academy, a little bit about it. Take about a minute. And if somebody had more questions about you and this topic and your book, or more questions, you may be interested in checking to see if it might be right for their kid. Could you give us a contact information, a little explanation of your school?
You betcha. My name is Carl Olding, O-L-D-I-N-G. The school is in northern Idaho, just outside of Sandpoint, by Clark Fork, Idaho. We always encourage parents to come visit. You can visit any time, including weekends. And Elk Mountain Academy was basically set up. I wanted to create something that would have been set up for a guy like me when I was 15 or 16 and I really needed it. I didn't get sober until I was 19, but I sure qualified when I was 15 and 16. And basically what I found is I would have had to have a way to have fun. And so we do a lot of stuff that's fun-oriented. We have dirt bikes. We have a competition, a wakeboard boat. We wake skate. We have a quarter pipe in the garage where guys can skateboard. So with the dirt bikes, Schweitzer for skiing, the lake for wakeboarding, we want them to know they can have fun clean and sober. And we also want them to know that even though they had academic failure in the past, they can turn that around as well. We like to have the parents come up and visit. We have the workshops every 3 months. And basically what we're trying to do is show them to rebuild the family and then send them off in a way in which I think they're going to be able to stay at home when they get home. And typically it goes one way or another. Either they stay in the clean and sober and they do well, or they don't, and there's other treatment programs that they go to or whatever. It's always bad when they use.
And you don't forget the academics, I bet.
No, we're a fully accredited school academically, and our class sizes are very small. There's only right now we have 19 kids. The most we ever have is 25. I like to have 20 is kind of like the sweet spot for us. But we have 19 kids and 3 teachers, and kids get a lot of one-on-one time. But it is very small because there's four grades in high school here. And again, we're fully accredited, but we do have an exemption for foreign languages and like that they have to take online. Other than that, everything's taught here by teachers on campus.
All right. And how would they contact you or the school?
The school's phone number is 208-266-1122. That's 208-266-1122. And my number is 208-255-9214.
Okay. And you'd like them to contact you also by email or your website?
Yeah, the website, and we have a lot of stuff on Facebook under Elk Mountain Academy, also under Carl Olding. I'm still not an IT guy, and so sometimes stuff gets put on my personal site that I want to be on the EMA site. But in any case, that's available as well, and we're at elkmountainacademy.org.
All right. Thank you very much. And we've been talking, this is Lon Woodbury, and we've been talking with Carl Olding, the founder of Elk Mountain Academy. And we've been talking about his book, which is available on Amazon.com and also his website, Addiction and Denial. Well, thank you very much. Good talking to you, Carl.
Thank you, Lon.